So some of you may not know that I actually announced my departure from the fellowship back in February of 2005, so 10 years ago. I just didn't know then exactly when I'd be leaving. So I said in that sermon, I'm going to be leaving, I don't know if it's in a year or 10 years, or maybe in 2030 when I'm 67. But what I did know with a 100% certainty is that one of three things would end my ministry. I would choose to leave, resigning or retiring. You would choose to fire me, or I would die. I'm cautiously optimistic at this point that with my departure 4 months hence, it'll be because I resigned, not died, or got fired. Knock on wood. I will count that among my proudest accomplishments here. So I announced my departure back in 2005, partly so I could have an opportunity to do a leave-taking sermon. I was frankly jealous of colleagues who got to cut loose after they announced their resignation or retirement and really tell it like it is. So now that I've supplied the actual end date, I'm going to take the opportunity to do a second leave-taking sermon. But let me preface that with something that I want to say loud and clear, which is that I am really glad that I stayed these past 10 years after that sermon. They've been really good years. A few days ago, I received some statistics from the Unitarian Universalist Association for congregations that currently have 400 or more members, so we're in that category. The statistics showed that in the last 10 years, our fellowship grew by 77%, a little more than that actually. And only one congregation on that list grew more during the same period, All Souls Church in Washington, D.C. Now, 77% is just a number, but behind that are the names of everyone who has joined in the last decade. If you're one of those people, would you raise your hand, join in the last decade-ish? Yeah, okay, see, that's cool. And I'm so glad that I had the opportunity to get to know each one of you, and I can see very clearly the impact you have made on the fellowship, and also the impact the fellowship has made on you. Okay, so what would I say if I was leaving, which I am, even though I have 4 months of active ministry with you left? I'm going to take this weird and uncomfortable step today of talking about you rather than us. And if you've listened to my sermons over the years, it has always been us, but not today. The first thing I would say to you is the same thing I said in 2005. It's a hard thing to say, but it needs to be said. Collectively, you, the members and friends of this fellowship, do not give enough money to fund your compelling, beautiful vision. What I said back in 2005 remains true today. I believe the money is there. Based on demographic studies we've done over the years, the money is there. It's in your wallets, it's in your purses, it's in your bank accounts. No, not all of your wallets or purses or bank accounts. Some of you cannot give anything. Some of you can only give a little, and some certainly can't give any more than you're already giving. But collectively, the money to fund the vision is there. It just hasn't all gotten here. The fellowship has grown amazingly, in spite of never really being staffed for growth. You have done this because of the extraordinary volunteerism among you, which is a great thing, and on the backs of your underpaid staff, which is not such a great thing. And for the first time ever today, I get to ask you to be generous in the annual stewardship drive without that sort of awkward knowledge that if you respond well, I will get more income. And this is the real joy of this, for real, what I'd say if I was leaving sermon. This time, my salary is not part of the equation, so this time, it's just the facts and the mission. So here's the lowdown. It's embarrassing to have such a dedicated, excellent staff and pay them closer to the minimum than the midpoint of the Unitarian Universalist Association guidelines for congregations of our size. And this is indexed according to the economy, local economy, so no, we're not off the hook because this is a low cost of living area. I have to admit and acknowledge that I feel badly that I did not realize until a couple months ago that an accredited interim minister needs to be paid at the midpoint of the UU Association guidelines. What this means for you is that if you want an accredited interim minister, and by accredited I mean someone who specializes in transition ministry, who's been trained and credentialed, if you want someone like that, you're going to have to pay that person about $10,000 more than you're paying me. And I have to say that, I should have known this, but I didn't. And it's not a shock where we are. There was a compensation survey a few years ago for senior ministers of large UU churches, and I was near the bottom of that list, so it's not a shock. And I'm not bitter about this in the least, and mostly I blame myself for not pushing a little more. But I don't feel good, I have to say today, about leaving you in a vulnerable spot with something that's so crucial to your future, as whether you'll be able to get a credentialed interim minister or not. I think you're simply going to have to find the money in this next budget, or you will seriously compromise the interim period and therefore your future by not being able to get an accredited interim minister. So if we meet this year's annual stewardship drive goal, which will give us a budget of about $720,000, the money will then be there to get an accredited interim minister. Meeting the goal will also get all the rest of our staff halfway from where they are now to that midpoint. And then the hope will be to get them the rest of that way in the next 2 years. Paying our superlative, hardworking staff at the midpoint of the guidelines would be really a wonderful thing. And more generosity in pledging will also allow us to move toward paying our fair share toward the Unitarian Universalist Association. By chronically not paying our fair share, we have really not been in right relationship with our fellow Unitarian Universalists across the country. I remember so vividly when a minister friend of mine visited this congregation several years ago, and his congregation has paid its fair share year after year, decade after decade. And he said something like this to me and to our leadership. Your fellowship has a membership professional, which is great. My congregation doesn't, because instead we're paying our fair share to the UU Association. And I've had to work a lot of extra hours, he said, to do some of the work a membership professional would do. The sacrifice on my part is carrying you, and that's not right. I agree, it's not right. It's not fair. So if we can meet the goal this year, it'll enable us to get halfway from where we are to our fair share. And then again, we hope to get the rest of that way in the next couple years. Switching gears from money, the second thing I want to say today is that fulfilling the fellowship's mission to be a leader in social justice is probably going to get harder. For 20 years, the fellowship has been a leader locally for the struggle for marriage equality. And I think you could say maybe the leader locally. I believe, for example, that the Include campaign, and just last night, It Gets Better week culminated with an amazing performance at the PAC, that I don't think that would have happened. That whole thing wouldn't have happened without this fellowship and the work we have done. Sitting there at the end of that concert, watching the community choir that was trained by Jay, that had Jay and Rachel, wherever you are, doing the solos, and six or seven other fellowship people in it, was just, I was bawling, man. It was amazing. And I think that's a tribute to the leadership we've done. By 2006, when the Anti-Marriage Equality Constitutional Amendment won in Wisconsin, our stand for marriage equality actually had become a winner for the fellowship, if not a winner statewide. What it did is it translated to more members and more generosity, not just from LGBTQ people, but from straight folks as well. Now, growing in numbers and increasing our budget was not why we took that stand, but the truth is that in many ways that, by 2006, was not a particularly courageous stand. It was actually gold for us. And what I think is that the next social justice frontier for the fellowship will be the continuing struggle for rights and full inclusion for people of color, especially Black Americans, and transgender people. To stand with Blacks and other people of color, those of you who are white are going to need to do some hard, painful examination of your own privilege. I'll be doing that work in St. Louis. To stand with trans folks, those of you who are not trans are going to have to look at your assumptions about gender and sexuality and your privilege compared to trans folks. This is not going to be easy work. And unlike standing for marriage equality, the fellowship likely is not, as a result, going to get a bunch of points in the community or people flock into our doors. Your social justice witness, I think, is going to have to get edgier. The third thing I'd say, if I was leaving, which I am, is really important in the face of what I've already said, which is, let's face it, kind of heavy. Maybe the best thing the fellowship has going for it, of many best things, I think, is its spirit of hospitality and joy, exuberant joy. The first video, Kat or Kira talked about that. So the amazing thing for me is that that joy, that hospitality was present when I came 25 years ago. It stayed even as we grew sevenfold and built this new building and added services and built the sanctuary. And so many newcomers still today comment on when they walk in just how palpable the hospitality and the joy feels. What an amazing and rare treasure. And even as you continue to explore tough subjects, take tough stands, deal with the many challenges of each of our individual human journeys, I hope you can hold on to that hospitality and that joy. It is the best thing here. In May, I'll come back to the fourth thing I want to say in much more depth because our theme in May is tradition. What I'll say for today is simply this, that there's a line from our Principles for a Healthy Congregation. That's the statement about how we want to be together in community. There's a line in that that jumps out at me. We strive to respect tradition and also embrace change as the needs of our community change. Wow, living up to the aspiration to respect tradition but also embrace change, that's going to be a real key during these next few transition years. And you have been amazingly skilled at change. There's no way that you could have grown so much without being remarkably adaptable. So I hope in these next years you'll stay open to new ideas, new approaches, new practices. Stay adaptable. It'll make this time really rich for you. I have the sense that the fellowship is on the cusp of bursting into a new flowering and a new surge of growth. This may not happen during the interim period. It typically doesn't. But I'm confident it will happen in the first years with the new senior minister, if not during the interim period. Can the fellowship grow another 77% in the next decade? Wouldn't surprise me a bit. I know that there's another 536 people, I did the math, that's 77% of our membership, 536 people in the Fox Valley who would love if they found this place and felt welcome to become part of this. I would like to think that this bursting forth would have happened if I stayed, and I certainly think it'll happen even if I go. And no one will be more joyous about this than I will be. So don't feel like if things go astonishingly well here after I go, that's going to make me feel bad. It's not. Don't feel like you'll be somehow disloyal to my legacy or memory if you revel in what happens here after I go. I'll be reveling too, quietly from afar. So I'll close with one last thought, which is simply that I hope all of you can cherish this fellowship. That that you can find many ways to treat it with love and respect and care. And part of how a lot of us are able to do this is financial. So be as generous as you can. It's good for the fellowship. It's good for this community. I think it's good for you. This is why this year I'm giving $450 a month to the fellowship. That's $5,400. This gift for me is a tangible expression of the love and the care I have for it. It also puts my values, puts my money where my values are. My wife Amy gives the same amount to her church. Giving money for us is a great source of meaning and joy. And in giving, we're tangibly part of that alchemy that the poem talked about, where we take our blue and another person's yellow, and together it makes a beautiful, simple green. And I have to tell you something. My gift to the fellowship is going to go away when I go away. I'm going to join another congregation, and I'm going to dig into the work there and be generous there. We're losing a few other large pledges over the next year because of people moving away. So the truth with this stewardship drive is that there's kind of a hole right out of the gate that we have to fill just to stay even. Before we even started the stewardship drive this weekend, a family who remains anonymous came forward and told me that they view this next period of transition with the senior minister position as so incredibly important for the fellowship's future that they've decided to give $10,000 next year on top of what they're already giving a generous pledge. The money will help, they hope, with the priorities I've described for this coming year, including and maybe especially getting that senior minister compensation up to the point we can get an accredited interim minister. One member of the household that's giving this extra $10,000 just put it beautifully in an email to me. We know that this interim period is critical to the long-term success of our faith community. In challenging times, communities need to rally for the common good. This isn't a challenging time in the sense that something dire has happened, but it feels somewhat uncertain, even with faith that it will all be fine. Our collective commitment creates stability as we move into the next chapter of the fellowship's life. It levels the ground for us to build upon. What a great image, leveling the ground for the next building of this amazing fellowship. And so I know most of you probably can't give an extra $10,000 next year. I get that. But I hope you will feel moved by this family's faith and devotion to think about what you can do, what makes sense for you. The fellowship needs you. I'd say you probably need the fellowship too. This $10,000 will not on its own, this extra, get us to our goal. It simply makes it more likely that together you can get there. I said last fall that nothing would make me happier or honor me more than a wildly successful annual stewardship drive, as well as a successful Greater Good campaign. We had the Greater Good campaign and it was great. What I want to say now is that if you feel moved to honor me, I hope you'll do so by taking part in this stewardship drive and making it the most effortless, the most successful, the most jaw-dropping, I can't believe we raised that much money ever stewardship drive. The fellowship deserves it. You deserve it. I don't know if I deserve it, but you guys do. This green we have created together from our yellows and our blues has been so good and so life-giving for so many people within these walls and beyond. So if you are able, now is a really good time to give financial expression to this gratitude.